Good morning. I'd like to thank Train for A, the invitation, and B, for organising this event. I'm an ecologist working in grazing systems. I've got a pretty different take on things. Agriculturists talk about sustainable. I don't believe that's adequate. We've degraded just about every environment that we've been in. We need to talk about regenerative. And what I do is I study ecological function in order to say, right, how do we organise our management so we achieve regeneration of ecosystem function? And just to give you an overview, first of all, the need to improve ecosystem function. We've got big problems and big opportunities. How research and management differ, because we've got to reach the people who manage the land, and right now we don't do much of that. The importance of studying management. If you look at the leading managers, they stand out head and shoulders above others in terms of impact on the environment and economics. We need to understand how they get their superior results. And I believe we need a systems framework in the way we operate to achieve that goal. And I'll tell you what I do. I'm going to be talking about very similar things to our first speaker. I've been doing it for 20 years, and I'll just show you how I've achieved the things he spoke about. And I'll end up with some relevant grazing and research questions that, from observations I've had with the ranchers that I work with. These things are critical to making ecosystems go around. You guys all know this, but just as one example, bottom right, pollination. We have severely compromised our ability to achieve any agriculture because of our impact on pollinators. These things respond to whole system impacts. We need to understand the whole system ecological functioning in order to affect regeneration. How sustainable is current agriculture? Modern agriculture, as you know, greatly increased human well-being and wealth, but the production of food has come at considerable environmental and social cost. We've got to try to increase productivity. What we've been very poor at is identifying unintended consequences and the negative things that those have. The EPA knows exactly what we've done badly, and we should be responsible for that. First of all, negative effects include disruption of hydrological and biogeochemical processes, soil erosion and impoverishment. Our annual soil erosion in the US is 3 times greater than corn, soybeans, and hay combined. That's not good. Excessive water use and aquifer depletion, contamination of soil water and fertilizer biocides, air pollution from aerosols, loss of habitat and biodiversity, including things like pollinators, increased GHG emissions. I'm not going to deal with all of these things, but the ecosystems I deal with, we are measuring many of them and figuring out the consequences of doing things differently. In contrast to all those problems, ecologically sensitive, regenerative management of ruminants in crop and grazing agriculture contributes positively to critical ecosystem benefits. I work with these people and I measure what they're doing. Conservation management measures, inclusion of perennial forages and cropping systems have been demonstrated to reduce negative impacts. I believe we as forage workers are part of the solution in undoing some of the unintended consequences, and I'm going to follow that through to the end. So the most serious problems associated with livestock are associated with the industrialized methods, and I'll deal with that a little bit later on. We have minimized those in rangeland ecosystems, but I think we can do the same in our tame pasture situations. You must remember that prior to industrial agriculture, ruminants were part of building and maintaining soil ecological function and fertility by providing cover, reduced need for inputs, enhancing soil microbial functions, enhancing water and nutrient retention and cycling, enhancing system biodiversity, and enhancing enterprise diversity. All of these things are very positive parts that we can incorporate into our systems. First of all, let's look at the way we operate as researchers normally compared to what producers want. The people achieving good results in grazing systems, both range and thing, have to deal with inherent landscape variability, a greater problem with rangelands and pasture people. And they have to manage adaptively or proactively to achieve desired goals. Otherwise, they don't. and they have to look at whole system responses, because they don't do things in isolation. Everything is related to each other on a landscape. In contrast, and our administrators are partially to blame for this, we have small data sets to control variability. We consider relatively few factors to get a nice clean result. We have fixed treatments. We have suboptimal rotation treatments, just because the journal will accept your paper if you've got something fixed and they can understand what you're dealing with. And we deal with short-term research. Short-term research is one of the major things that we are guilty of in coming up with results that don't gel with people who are achieving superior results in the field. And I'll deal quite a bit with that later on. Grass farmers need to know, how does the whole system respond to various things? How good is any management tool? Where does it work and not work? How do you make it work as well as possible? And this is changing, so you have to be variable in the way you do this. And the best people understand what their goal is and how they're going to have to change according to certain things that happen. So they are proactive in the way they operate. What combinations of management give the best to achieve the best? What will work on any particular farm? Generally, researchers haven't addressed this, because unless you're cranking out 4 or 5 pubs a year of 2-year-old research, you're not going to make it. So we have to organize ourselves differently. So what I do is I use a whole systems framework, and this includes the people who manage the land, because they're a critical part of it. Why is there a discrepancy between much research and farmer achievements? In the range arena, the people who are achieving conservation awards and superior productivity are practicing almost the opposite of what the universities are saying is the best management. How the heck does this come about? So what I'm looking at is, what is the best that management can achieve to sustain livelihoods and the delivery of ecosystem goods and services? This is a fundamentally different question to what most people do. I want to find out what is the best we can do and then figure out how we actually do that. So let's look now at the studying of management, because this is at the core of it. Leading farmers achieve superior results by the way they allocate resources, use different techniques, use novel concepts, and adaptively change these elements to achieve outcomes that exceed the sum of parts involved. I do field research at the farm scale. I also do parallel simulation modeling. And the modeling that brings together different combinations of things is actually predicting what the people in the field are getting. And if you do something in a fixed manner for a short period of time, you'll come up with one result. If you operate proactively or adaptively, both my field research and the models are showing the same thing. You get a superior result. This is the art of farming, being able to put things together in a manner that exceeds what other people are doing. We need to find out, how the heck do we do this? And I'm looking at understanding the ecology to help me understand that. We have a lot to learn from the leading farmers, and I work with them to make sure that some of the smaller scale reductionist research that I do actually has meaning for them, and B, try and figure out how you incorporate a whole systems approach to achieve those goals. So let's look at some of the limitations of reductionist science. Small plot equals reductionist. It's pretty inadequate for improving the understanding of management. You can understand the effect of X on Y very nice and neatly using this approach, but management involves a whole system. Because when you simplify and isolate inputs and treatments, you're understanding just a small part of the whole system in absence of what's happening in a system context. So, this precludes the discovery of emergent properties that are the signature achievement of leading managers. Understanding management can only be done by assessing system-level responses, which currently we hardly address at all. And I will show you how I've managed this. I don't claim to have a perfect system. I'm just trying to learn as I go. There's a paper by a Dutch group, Van der Ploeg et al., 2006. I would urge you to read that, because it explains in detail the differences obtained from reductionist research compared to whole system research, and they end up with entirely different results. And here's just a quick look at what's going on. There are a bunch of The Dutch in their area have a great deal of problem with the amount of nitrates leaching through the soil profile. So this has been part of their research portfolio for many years. And those working on small plots came up with one result saying this is the amount of, you'd have to change your management. And a whole lot of farmers, dairy farmers in this case, based on foragers, looked at this and thought, no, we do this better. So they went and studied their whole systems. They put much less and different kinds of fertilizer. They had a different kind of forage that they produced. They were allowed. They reduced their concentrate inputs. They improved the animal production by taking stresses away from the animals. But if you overfeed them, particularly nitrogen products, you affect their health. You shorten their productive life. It affected the quality of the products that they were doing. And most importantly is the poop that they were producing was toxic to many of the elements that we really needed to drive the system, in particular fungi. As soon as you got high nitrogen inputs, you reduce the fungi. And they found out when they had a mixed pasture sward based on legumes where you eliminated or minimized nitrogen inputs, the fungi became prevalent and actually hung on to the nitrogen that went through the system in any other kind of management. So they shortened and improved the nutrient cycling. The whole system benefited from doing things in a different way. They only identified that by working with people in a full system. So let's come down to this. This is the environment I work in. Taller grasses, shorter grasses, bare ground, and you'll see the erosion associated and the runoff and infiltration with each of those. This is where you need to be to get use of the moisture. The amount of moisture that gets in the ground that you can use is the limiting factor. But where we've managed, most people are operating here, and we need to change that and move into there. These are the little critters, the soil microbes, that control 90% of the function, and they depend on the plants. So how we manage the plants is critical to how this whole ecosystem functions. And what I'm doing is saying, okay, how do we manage the plants with our livestock to make sure that these little critters are working for us optimally to drive the system? Part of this whole deal is temperature. Bare ground in our environment goes up to 140 degrees many, many times in those hot summer months. Right next door, where you've got a well-managed area that's got a decent amount of cover, you will only go up to 85, 90 max in the soil. So you retain your microbial function there, whereas in these bare ground areas, you actually just about eliminate it completely. It goes deep down and doesn't function. It takes about 3 or 4 months to actually come back to being functioning and working for you. So the principles of improving rangeland soil health: improve plant cover, use perennial plants, or manage for perennial plants, manage for the most productive plants, leave adequate residue, minimize bare ground. This closes down your whole ecosystem function. Grow plants for as many months of the year, because the more days that plants are photosynthesizing, the more carbon you're putting in the ground. The more carbon you've got in the ground, the better your ecosystem functions. Let's look now at what happens at a landscape scale, because this is absolutely critical, particularly in landscapes. This is a 3,000-acre area up in the hill country. Those green points are GPS points of the cows grazing there. You'll notice they do not graze evenly over the environment. So what's happening here is entirely different to what's happening here, and the effect of stocking rate is, so you're having patch degradation. Let's look then at the research that's been done. The research that's been done in rangelands is done at this scale, 90% of it. Let me ask you, how many of these, or combinations of them, would you need to study to represent what's happening at that larger scale? No matter how many you have, you're not going to, because scale matters. And that's what we've got to do with management, is, okay, how do we get rid of that unintended consequence? So, many of the guys who win in conservation awards use multi-paddock grazing to achieve these goals, but how they do it determines how well they achieve their goals. So, dividing up so you can have the animals in each one of these for so you're grazing the whole landscape. You can graze each one of these areas and therefore de facto spread your grazing pressure over the whole landscape. You can they select a wider variety of plants, and they learn this very quickly. How much is grazed, period of grazing, and length of time to recover can be controlled if you manage intelligently. Let's look now at a very good example of what happened. This is done at the Noble Foundation, and this is a fairly beat-up piece of tall grass prairie. You can see a couple of larger, taller grass species there, but a lot of weeds. Now, generally, agriculturists will come in and say, oh, we've got to spray to get rid of the weeds. Okay, huge cost. Is it going to do anything? Anyway, the Noble guys, all they did was put in one water point with 18 paddocks, and they managed to improve the plants that they wanted. In other words, they used them moderately and allowed them to recover before they grazed them again. These are the results, animal unit days over the years. And you'll see they increased from this level to almost fourfold. I've got ranchers managing 10, 20,000 acres that have achieved the same amount in 6 years, that amount of increase. Now you'll see here, dipped a little bit in the dry years, but there was a steady increase. The key here is managing the desirable plants so that they improved and increased. And that is the absolute key. If you came in and you stocked at this level to begin with, what would you do? You would preclude any improvement because the plants that you wanted wouldn't be able to. And that's where there's a difference in the way you do things that really counts. So the way they achieved this was they matched animal numbers to available forage. They spread grazing over the whole ranch. They defoliated moderately in the growing season the plants that they wanted. They had short grazing periods because that favours both animal performance and decreases impact on the plants that they want to foster. And they applied adequate recovery before regrazing. And in many environments, like the tall grass prairie, if you let them go through to reproduction, your animals have poor nutrition. So you've got to manage the leafiness of your plants, and many of these guys are doing very successfully. When we incorporate that into our models, or don't incorporate it, we get a huge positive effect by specifically managing to keep the plants leafy. So, leaf removal, you've got to make sure you don't take too much leaf off, because you want to create this situation in order to handle droughts in the area. The situation we've been living now in the serious drought in Texas, those guys who are managing well have hardly been affected at all by the droughts. And their neighbours are just about out of business, because one group had this, the other group had that. And when asked, the National Conservation Grazing Award guy was asked, how come you doing so well in the drought? He said, well, for 25 years, you've been managing for this. So it's the frame of mind and the context that you're managing in. So here we are. This is one of the successful managers. Looking at ecosystem function, what you've got to go for is you've got to manage so the maximum amount of energy that comes in is captured and therefore produces, that drives the whole ecology of the system. You've got to manage so that the hydrological function is as good as it can be. Litter on the ground, plant cover, shading, so your microbes are operating optimally. You've got to manage in a manner that optimizes nutrient cycling, and you've got to have biodiversity because there are a whole lot of positives that flow from biodiversity. Here's light continuous grazing at half the stocking rate of this. What do? They concentrate on those areas. And you'll see, if you nub a thing off like this, when comes a drought, what's happening to those plants? They've got a greatly diminished root system, so they cronk out and die after a couple of months of serious drought, whereas these things with deep roots just keep trucking. So these are the differences we're looking at. So, rangeland academics say that had a different hypothesis to this. All these observations that I've just given you now, particularly the landscapes one, this was my hypothesis. And I will show you how I rigged a system study to actually address that, and we'll come back to that. Now, when you're studying landscapes, you can't have two reps. But what you can do is have the same three treatments in each one of counties that are in a similar area. And what you're looking for then is, am I getting the same response between treatments in each of those areas? And this, the ranchers love this because you're working in their space. You are doing things exactly the same way that they do. All I do is come in afterwards and measure the effects of what they've been doing. Now, this is where the time factor comes in. We located people who had been grazing the same way for at least 10 years. I've got long-term data sets, 15 years or so, from our location. And we basically found that you won't pick up treatment differences from grazing unless you go through at least two, and preferably three, wet and dry drought cycles. And if you're in a dry area than where we are, you need to go to three or four, which entails a minimum of 10 years and optimally 15 to 20 years in the really dry areas, less than about 15 inches of rainfall. So these are things that we haven't done well and we need to incorporate in the way we do business. And you'll notice here that we located continuous graze, best class. We found the best guys using continuous grazing at 20 acres per AU, continuous graze at heavy stocking rate, which is the normal way people are grazing there. And then planted multi-paddock guys who've been going for at least 10 years, best in class. So that's what we're going to look at briefly. And I'm just giving this as an example. Bare ground, of course, this is fairly expected. And this has huge repercussions. So the soil microbes that drive the system, you'll notice heavy continuous light. We had some grazing exposures, but not completely. Bacterial, nothing different. Fungi, there's a greater difference here. The fungal to bacterial ratio, much greater there than anywhere else. And this is why we need to worry about fungi, because they provide access and transport nutrients. They extend the root volume and depth. They exude glomalin, which enhances soil carbon. This increases water retention, nutrient retention, increases drought resistance. I'm working with microbiologists now. We've identified plant growth as highest with the highest fungal to bacterial ratio. Even when you put in nutrients the way we do with fertilizers, that didn't explain the increase in productivity to the same degree that the fungal to bacterial ratio did. So, penetration resistance. One of the things that people will say using high density grazing, oh, you're going to trample the ground and it's not going to, you know, it's going to set it back. But in fact, we found the opposite. These two were stocked at the same rate, and this was stocked at double that rate. How the hang does this come about? I'll come back to that just now with my hypothesis. Organic matter. This was the starting point. The multi-camps were at this level 10 years prior because there were properties that were taken over, beaten up, and then they changed the management. Those two are significant. You know, they look pretty close together all the way down, but because you've got a confirmed difference between all of them, that's what happened, and this is what it resulted in. Those are pretty close, but you've got to remember that this was there and we built it back again. What we haven't done is say, okay, if we just had light continuous grazing, what length of time would it take before we improved it to the same level? We just haven't got that data. So let's look at this. Those grazing treatments, organic matter, differed like that through the profile. The cation exchange capacity was higher here. But critically, the water holding capacity was hugely improved by that amount. When you speak to farmers and ranchers about this, they understand exactly what that means. Let's look at the species composition. You can see the amounts here. The most productive grasses, of course, are the tall ones, very low. These things have been beaten into the ground. And you will ask, if this is a double stocking rate of that, how come this is lower than that? Well, the cows know, even in a large commercial pasture, exactly where each one of those big blue stem or Indian grass plants are. They will go for them and they'll just keep them down. Whereas here, we moderately graze them so they can bounce back quickly. We let them recover. After 10 years, this is the difference that you're getting. And the next most productive group of grasses are the mid grasses, and you'll see there's still high production there, and this is the major component there, still low in this front. Annual forbs. This is where you get lots of these things and, oh my God, we've got to spray. And we've got to come and tell you to spray. But it's the way you've managed that's caused them. You don't have to spray if your management is good. Even going through drought cycles, you don't have to. It's just a minor component there, but you've got it under control. Now, let's look at the economics. So we've done life cycle analysis on this, and we considered here what the initial farm practice was, the practice change, heavy continuous to multi-paddock, heavy continuous to light. These are just speculative changes. And then if you started off with light continuous and went to MP, all went back again, what is the economic profit, the carbon profit, the total profit from those two, and the best choice? And every time, this little puppy comes out ahead. Now, the life cycle analysis, for you, those of you who don't know this, takes into account all the greenhouse gas inputs, energy inputs, like pesticides, fertilizers and stuff like that. Their GHG signature for that whole production system is incorporated in the cost of benefit here. And this is what the IPCC and people like that are dealing with. So we didn't refute that hypothesis. Conclusions. Appropriate regenerative grazing management sequesters more carbon, improves water function, improves species composition, stabilizes soil, enhances wildlife, improves economic returns. Now, when you're dealing with pastures, it's the same basic number of things, but if you eliminate these, over and above the range situation is what you need to achieve the same goals from a soil health point of view. So we've done this in a number of cases. These are two profiles taken across the fence line by Christine Jones in Aussie, and we're doing the same thing. You can see the difference there, and all the parameters for soil health are superior there. And this was achieved by a combination of cover crops in a rotation grazing system with high-density grazing managed to achieve these particular goals. So, importance for ecosystem function. Regenerative cropping and grazing can improve all of these parameters. And this is what we're measuring with the producers that we're working with. Now, people are high on cows. They say cows produce emissions. We've got to get rid of them. Hang on a minute. If a cow's on grass, even in moderately managed areas, the amount that's sequestered exceeds the amount of emissions. Even in poor management, the same thing applies. Let's now look at some of the best things. Rich Conant and Keith Porstian at Colorado did a meta-analysis of all the data. The best pasture management sequestered 11 tonnes of CO2 more per hectare than the baseline. And in our study, this is the amount that we measured compared to the baseline. So, let's look at look at agricultural emissions. Cropping, pretty darn high. Corn itself, high. Erosion, high. Total livestock, much less. Now, these sort of puppies are getting blamed for things. But the only reason this is high is because they're using corn to go into that in the systems. So when you take the signature from this out of it, you end up at a different point. This is the scenario we've got with our data. This is the current livestock production in green, erosion, and cropping. If we reduced the ruminants by 50%, or even 100%, it doesn't change the profile very much. But if you introduce just 25% of the area is switched across to regenerative cropping and grazing, the amount that those practices add to the ground is almost a complete offset for that. And if you add more, then suddenly you change the picture completely just because of the amount of carbon you put in the ground. This is why I'm high on grazing systems, because they can improve ecosystem services enormously if we manage them correctly. So let's just revisit that a little bit more. The future research I believe we need to do is to check the previous research for contradictory evidence from other sources. Look at what the better guys are achieving, and does our research actually predict that? Generally not. Generally, many of those guys are doing a better job than we're doing in research. Check for unintended consequences. We need to minimize or eliminate those. Expand current research to include farm-based. Test an extended range of management with corroborated models so you can examine further what's going on. Evaluate perception of landowners. Examine policy options to eliminate perverse incentives. If you're feeding during droughts hay to keep animals on the land, that is knocking the hell out of the land. And it's just not good for any of us. We need to know, how does the system operate as a whole? How do we achieve desired goals? How good is any management tool? Where does the tool work and not work? How does the tool work as well as it can? What combinations give the best that management can achieve? What are the unintended consequences? And it takes many years to determine ecosystem responses. I've got two more slides to illustrate. In my work with heavy density grazers, we have observed various things that they noticed these are all testable hypotheses, and I bring them up here because we don't normally look at these things. So here's a couple of ideas I'm just going to throw out. What management of forage plants results in the highest function of soil microbes and fauna? Does quality of litter influence the health and functioning of soil microbes and fauna? What is the value of optimizing the number of days of photosynthesizing material? As soil microbes increase soil fertility, do plants remain longer in the productive and high-quality vegetative stage? What is the optimal trade-off between putting high-quality forage on the ground and having livestock consume it? Many of the guys who are doing this reckon that that's feeding their earthworms drives the whole system. What is the function of fungi, and how do you manage grazing for them to function optimally? What different grazing goals are needed through the grazing year? What's the value of multiple forage species? How much does primary and secondary productivity increase as management increases ecological function? To what extent can we replace inorganic inputs with management and organic inputs? And what's the connection between healthy soils, healthy livestock, and healthy people? Thank you.
Do we have any questions specific to Richard before we get into our overall discussion?
Richard, I think you were here when we were talking about the stock.
Yes, yes.
Perspective among producers that it's trampling and the residue and high density systems, it's contributing to improved soils. In your case, I sense that you were moving more in the direction toward improving cover, increasing light capture, and increasing root mass.
Yep.
So I wonder if you could comment on your perspective on the difference, the impacts of the above ground trample material or the below ground
in terms of... Most agricultural research doesn't deal with causal mechanisms and what they mean. If I do research that says, okay, the hypothesis is that the amount of bare ground there regulates the amount of carbon that's lost from the soil, the productivity increases, it determines the number of carbon that goes into the soil. You've got to understand those causal mechanisms. And if you structure your research not just to ask a productivity question, but what is the driver? How are you changing the drivers of your ecosystem with different management to achieve these different things? Up in Canada, we've got a guy who's been operating for 16 years with high-density mobbing. He changes two or three times a day. After the first 4 years, he increased his infiltration rates from 4 inches to 8 inches an hour. We just measured them again last week. He's up to 30 inches an hour compared to the baseline of the neighbors next to him. So our basic research, which operates for 3 or 4 years, achieved a little bit, but not much. But as soon as you get on a curve where you're starting to come up again, and this is the time factor. You mentioned that. Time factor is critical because these things are additive, but you've got to keep at it long enough to find out, okay, where's the end point? Where does it start tapering off? That and looking for causal mechanisms and testing hypotheses related to that and how management can change those things, I think that's the key of understanding systems to improve them.
All right, well, thank you, Richard.